Hello and welcome. Happy Thanksgiving, and thank you for joining me. This is Darkness Radio Presents Holzer's Ghosts, and we have got an amazing tale to talk about tonight. This was an exciting episode. A lot of strange activity took place on the program this evening, and with this episode specifically, we're gonna be bringing my guests on in just a few moments. Alexandra Holzer and Shane Pittman will be joining us as we talk about Edge of the Veil. But first, I wanted to just thank everybody for spending a little bit of time with us on Thanksgiving, watching the Holzer Files. Thank you from the bottom of all of our hearts. And thank you for joining us tonight on the live after show. We're going to be taking your questions throughout the program. And if I don't answer or ask your question, just ask it every now and again in the live chat stream, because I will try to get in as many questions as we can during this evening's presentation. For those of you that tuned in a little early tonight, you got to see something pretty cool. It was an episode of Ghost Adventures at Rolling Hills Asylum. And that was my first appearance with Ghost Adventures. I had told them about that location numerous times that we'd hung out. And I said, we should really do something there as doing an event. And they decided to film an episode. And I believe, if I remember correctly, this was the first time they ever invited a guest investigator to join them. And I went out, had a chance to be a part of that episode, and people always ask me, what is one of the scariest experiences you've ever had? And that episode was one of them. There were so many things going on. But at one point, when I was standing in the hall, we had just come in, we could hear footsteps running above us on what would be the roof of the building. We could hear them. And I'm standing here, right in front of me is Zach. Off and to my right with his camera is Aaron, and then right behind me and to my left is Nick Groff. And we were kind of chatting about what was going on, and we start to hear this wailing sound, which turns into what sounds like a woman's scream from the end of the hallway. I turn and look, and there is Nick Groff, and he's got his camera slung up on his shoulder, but over his other shoulder is this shock white face. Imagine the Pazuzu face from The Exorcist. This face was over his shoulder staring. And then as Nick turned his head, this head folded back, straight back. One of the creepiest things, hands down, I've ever seen in my life. That was Rolling Hills Asylum. So if you missed it, that's a shame. You might be able to catch it on a replay, but check it out for yourself. It was, I think, my first TV appearance, period. Then I think I did one on Paranormal State, and then I ended up doing about 7 or 8 episodes of Ghost Adventures. A lot of fun, though. It was a great way to spend Thanksgiving after slating, all of this food and family and having a good time. We just sat back on the couch, relaxed, and lo and behold, there's an episode of Ghost Adventures that Dad got to be on back in the day. I think it was like 2007 or 2008 that episode first aired. So it was great to see that and get a reflection back. Let's get started. Tonight's episode, Edge of the Veil, Episode 5, Season 2. We've got two guests joining us this evening, and two guests featured prominently on tonight's episode. Of course, joining us, Alexandra Holzer. She is the daughter of Hans Holzer and an investigator in her own right. She is also, I want to get this right. Are you a medium? Are you a sensitive? Are you an empath? Are you all of the above? What's the correct title for you?
It's confusing. I came up with I hate labels, just so that we know. I say I'm an intuitive, basically because we all have the ability, and I feel it's pretentious to put myself in one box because I'm growing and changing. I'm an intuitive, and I'm a medium, and I get impressions. So I'm not a psychic where I can predict things. I see people, I see what they're wearing, or I do medical. I can see medical issues, and that's kind of in the past 3 years that's developed. Does that make sense?
Maybe I can get you to look at this rash real quick for me, and we.
Only at headquarters.
That's right. And here's something I want to address, Alex. I always feel like I'm doing you a disservice introducing you, because here's Alexandra Holzer, the daughter of Hans Holzer. You're more than the daughter of Hans Holzer. You've worked in this field for 20, 25 years, investigating and researching and writing. And you are your own entity. I mean, obviously, we kind of have to introduce you that way because of the connection to the Holzer Files. But I think going forward, we're just going to introduce Alexandra Holzer. I'm going to belay the whole daughter of, because, that's always an important part of the story, but you're your own investigator. And I want people to realize that you've earned your own way and wings doing what you do in the paranormal field as well. So that's an important aspect.
Thank you.
Rockland County, New York. This was a place that drew your father back numerous times. Why do you think this area was so crazy with paranormal activity?
That's a great question. You know, it's interesting how some locations are not cut and dry, where you go in and you do your research, you go back maybe one more time, maybe three, depending, but usually you get a gist of what's going on when you spend all that time there. And this particular area in Rockland County, which wasn't really far from where we grew up in Manhattan, just kept pulling him back in. And on one hand, I wonder, because it was the beginning of him to really do the research publicly and to go on foot and see what was going on. You know, he was very young at that point. And so I feel like it's almost like the houses in that area, the places that he went to, the people he connected to from having dinner at a bar and hearing about this place, you know, which brought him there, you know, all these little things I think were no coincidences. So I think it has to do with the path that he was going to walk on moving forward in his career.
Well, and this was his first indoctrination, really, working under a mentor. And maybe you could talk to us a little bit about his mentor and what she saw in your dad that made her realize this wasn't just a journalist. This was somebody whose career path would be divined by the supernatural.
Famed Irish medium Eileen Garrett was the woman and amazing medium that she was that introduced my father to the idea of perhaps he should put these stories and interests and research into a book. And they were at a dinner party one night, and she said, Hans, you have to make book. I see many books coming, you know. And of course, my father loved that, you know. He was like, oh, yes, yes. And at the time, he was writing a lot of musicals. He was a journalist, and he was teaching. So he started to put that together, and the birth of the Ghost Hunter book came out in the 1960s. And it just, that's what that began. So he got a reading from Eileen that basically was the pinnacle moment for him to put it out there for the public.
Well, in Rockland County, you can see, I guess, you always go back to your first love, right? There's always that interest. You go to that case and it kind of invigorates you. And then to realize that it wasn't just a one-off case. There were multiple locations that were reaching out to your father seeking help and guidance because something was happening. Now that your father loved history, and he really, I mean, that was kind of his real affinity, was the history and getting history right and understanding it. And then the ghosts kind of aided him in those stories. That area was so rich with history and so much death and tragedy through the years, not just from the indigenous people, but settlers who'd gone through their war times. It was certainly an area where a lot of energy had been stirred up during that time. Now, I want people to understand, this wasn't a case that Hans Holzer blew off. This wasn't a case that he was not prepared to do. He unfortunately got this case 15 years ago. And your father was, what, 80 at that time?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was just the point where, you know, Hans Holzer wasn't just going out and doing ghost hunts, but he was still helping people and answering many emails, as many as he could. I mean, how much mail was your dad getting even into his 70s and 80s?
Well, no email. We did buy a computer for Ida. Well, we had the computer really for one of the Christmases. My sister and I said, let's just do this for Daddy. And we bought it. And then we went back to visit him one day. And we went in the office and there was a computer with a fabric cloth over it and antiques and the cat in the middle sitting on. I said, what? And he goes, I don't know how to work this. So he got letters, like a bazillion letters, and the phone kept ringing off the hook. So he actually gave out his phone number. And then he would tell people if they needed help, if there was an interest or something was going on, they'd pass that phone number on. So literally it was the phone and letters.
And he was constantly being barraged with requests to communicate and lend some insight into cases. So I just wanted to point that out, that when we said, you know, there was one letter that went unanswered, it wasn't out of ignorance or just not caring about the case. It was just that your father was, you know, 80 years old and
too much.
Yeah, it was too much.
He was ill. You know, he was ill off and on. I mean, he was still moving about a little bit at that point. It was just kind of, you know, it just, you know, he moved on from that. I think he was more spiritual and more, I'd say, in the mindset of just quieting everything, because he'd been at it full time. And so he, I'm sure, missed a lot of different things at that point. So.
And speaking of, you know, getting to that point where you just kind of are tired of moving and doing things, it's a good time to introduce our next guest, Shane Pittman, who's as I've read on Twitter, wow, he's on food and having a slow move. He's had to get through this. Happy Thanksgiving to both of you.
Happy Thanksgiving. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, Shane, this was a cool episode. We're going to give some behind the scenes tales as well. And there's one in tonight's episode that I want to mention. And I'll explain. We told you, folks, when we film these episodes, it's guerrilla filming. We're filming 5 days for, on the lowest end, 8 hours, highest end, about 12 to 14 hours a day. And sometimes you get punchy and you get tired. And although the show is not scripted as a show, there are times we may have to pick up a line because a dog barked, one of us coughed or sneezed or something during the deal. And there was one perfect gem in this episode tonight that I wish would have gone out for the world to see. Do you know what I'm about to talk about, Shane? Alex, after all of these episodes now of poor Shane, we're now 15 episodes in of Shane being sent to the worst locations. We were standing there deciding where we're going to break off. And I personally, I'm just going to be honest, I don't like ghosts of children. It unnerves me to no end. As a father, I don't like it. It's icky. It's weird. And a lot of it is, I don't necessarily believe it's really a child. I sometimes I think they try to reel us in by appearing as a child. And because it was this darker underpinning of a story, I was really feeling uncomfortable. And as we're standing there, Cindy goes, well, I want to go here and I'm going to do some automatic writing. And I go, well, you know what? I'm not real keen on kids' ghosts. So Shane, why don't you go to the basement? And without missing a beat, Shane looks at me and he goes, fuck you. You go to the basement, babe. And we all burst out laughing like that. And unfortunately, it couldn't be used. I wish it would have. Had we not all laughed, had I been more shocked, I'm sure it would have made the final cut of the episode. But we made it, but I loved it because it was just that one moment, that one brief shining moment, Shane stood up and told me to screw off and go take care of it myself. We ended up breaking up and going off into our different locations. But Shane, as you're going through all of the files and reading, you know, the books and all of the stuff that was going on, when you get in there during that baseline investigation with Cindy, and she's immediately picking up on this really kind of unnerving vibe, and you're picking up on this kind of sense of dread. What was it like being in there when immediately, I mean, that was one of the few times Cindy walked into a location and was like, I don't want to be in here. I don't like this place.
Yeah. As soon as we walked in, it was like that. It was weird because it was like from the outside walking into the house was two different atmospheres altogether. As soon as you go inside, everything changed. It felt like your first instinct was to run out of there. It was a really creepy vibe. And then there were certain areas of the house that had different vibes too. Like the basement, we're talking about that. The reason why I said that to you is because I don't know if TV gives it justice, because going down there, and Dave, you saw, because we investigated it a little bit later, that didn't make the episode, but it is creepy down there, man. And just the vibe alone is completely off from the rest of the house. It's almost like it's its own separate thing there. You know, it's just, it's really hard to explain unless you were there, you know?
And one thing that I don't know if you were privy to, Alex, Bob Mazziello is a delightful guy. Very sweet. He's very nonchalant about his ghosts. The one scary encounter he had when the hands reached up through the bed and choked him, that was his most unnerving. But for the most part, he had learned to just kind of grow with them. And the reason there were all these tunnels under his house was he believed the spirits were trying to bring him to something. So he's been digging under his house for years. And you get down there, and there are little pilings of rocks holding up the house. Yeah. And you're underneath there. And that was part of the unnerving part. I got underneath there, and I'm like, oh, this thing could come down at any time. And when we went down into that basement area, I'll explain a little bit more of what I saw. Again, I'm going to ask our camera guys to we have to do a moment once in a while in an episode when it's looking brightly lit. And that looked like there were lights up all over that basement. Those were IR lights so that we could film and see around the basement. I couldn't see anything.
Right.
It was black down there. It was dark. And as I'm looking, trying to get my eyes to adjust, and I've got our camera guy, Rob, is standing there filming me, and I'm doing EVP. We're hearing things moving around back there. And I'm like, does this come out anywhere? Nope. What's down there? He's like, it's just a dead end. And I'm like, but dude, you're hearing that. He's like, yeah, I hear that. And as we're kind of chatting, I turn back around and I'm trying to communicate. And this little, I would say like a 5 foot tall spirit, like a kid spirit, came running by, stopped and looked at me, and then took off running to the back wall. And that's what threw me. I wasn't expecting that, because it wasn't just like this quick, sharp dart of a shadow. It was a kid, and he stopped and looked right at me and then took off again. That's why I went backwards. Now, what didn't get shown in the episode was he had that area separated by just these pink insulation walls, right? He had put up pink insulation to kind of separate some of those darker, cavernous areas from the other part of the basement. And when I saw that and I backed up, I lost my footing, backing up quick and trying not to hit cameraman Rob on the way out. And I go through that wall like the Kool-Aid man, right? And I caught the rim of the wall with my elbow going through, and I stopped myself. And had my elbow not caught that, what you didn't see was on the other side, when you watch that episode, that scene, and you see me laid back into that wall, right behind it is a full rack of wine. This guy had all these collectible wines. Had I gone back this much more, I would have taken out his entire expensive wine rack and blown the place out. Yeah, so weird little tidbits of information that you don't always get to see when you're watching the show. But that was pretty freaky to be down there and to see something like that. And especially because our camera guy, Rob, right, he's standing there trying to film me, and we're hearing stuff. And he's holding the camera, and he keeps doing the shoulder look around because it's starting to get on his nerves. And that's why the camera angle is so crazy. They show my thermal camera. They show him rotating because he's trying to keep up with me. And you got to give the guy credit because he's checking on me to make sure I'm okay. But we're both hearing something running around in the back. And it just all hell broke loose for those few moments. But it was really – that was one of the more unnerving moments for me this season, because it just shocked the hell out of me to be down there and have that kind of experience. And especially what's running through my mind is this little woman's ghost that has been seen in the hands reaching up to Bob's throat and choking him. It just freaked me the hell out. But next time I'm gonna tell Rob, when we're in one of those situations when it's that black, I'm going to go, turn off your spotlight for a minute. Let's just let the viewers at home see how dark it is. Because I think
you know, Dave, sorry about that. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I can see why you were so unnerved, man, because you said that there was somebody darting back there like a little child. It looked like a little child, but there was nowhere to dart to. That's what you were talking about. Like it was a dead end, but there was nowhere to dart to. So if you were seeing somebody running back there, there was nowhere to go. So that's even more scary to think about, you know?
Well, and Rob tells me, go back down here. Come on, we got to go down here. So we go down there and we walk back in that corner, and it literally, you walk down and it breaks off into a T, and both ends just end up at walls, maybe 5-6 feet away. And I went up there and I looked, and I could hear something moving around. But again, we're underneath the house. I can't tell if I'm hearing mice or rodents or whatever. But I notice something sparkly. And I reach up. Now, this guy's down there all the time digging, looking for some kind of buried treasure under his house. And I find this ancient penknife, this little like a kid's penknife. And, you know, that really kind of connected to me, too, is, boy, this kid was down there. Did he bring me to this? And we shot a scene where I give it to Bob in the reveal. But I think part of it is, you know, what does that really tell us? I can't tell you the ghost said it there. So I think that's why they edited it. But it was weird because he was blown away. He's like, I've been down there 100 times. Where did that come from? How did that get down there? Should I dig more? And we're like, no, don't dig anymore, dude. This house is going to come down. Now, there was a lot of talk on this episode of orbs, and we'll get to that. But I want to go back to you for a few minutes, Alex, about your meeting with Lizette. How cool was that as Hans Holzer's daughter meeting with the granddaughter of this world famous medium and psychic that your dad worked with and tutored under? That sounded weird. You know, he keep it clean. But that was his mentor. What was it like for you to be able to sit down face to face with somebody, you know, another bloodline to your dad's work?
Yeah, it was surreal. You know, I mean, we had spoken briefly over the years. I started after my father had passed. I really tried reaching out to people. People had reached out to me even prior when he was still with us, you know, in the physical sense. But this was like a mission of mine. And I found her, you know, because she still runs the Parapsychology Foundation in New York and the library that she housed out in Long Island, you know, and I have a connection to Long Island. So I just felt it was time, but we really never got to get together because our lives were always so busy. So when I was able to meet her face to face, and we're supposed to sit down and get, you know, makeup and touch ups, and I'm like, I don't care about that. I'm like, it's Lisette. We were like two babushkas, like two Jewish, like, yet we were just like da 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 da. And Rob's like, okay.
But that has to be pretty cool.
Yeah. The generational thing, you know.
I'm kind of giving weird looks off to the side. Right during the middle of the show, my son decides it's time to good time to come down here and start boiling up a pot of coffee. So I apologize for the weird bubbly noises.
Oh, I can use a coffee.
Yeah.
You get a chance to sit there and talk with somebody connected to your dad. Are those moments golden to you that it's
yeah
read through?
It, you know, the opportunities I've been granted because, like I said, life is busy and you can't just go and do what you want once you have kids. You know, it's just the reality of it. The physical part of it is very different than when you're emailing somebody. So to have that moment granted for us to do this and that we're all in the same state, we're not far from each other, it all kind of melded together beautifully. And I just felt like this is a piece of my history. This was her grandmother worked with my father, but they were really dear friends. You know, it was beyond that. And she's so loving with me, you know, and it's like another continuation of Garrett and Holzer. It's really surreal like that, you know?
And you know, being able to carry on and do the investigations yourself and kind of not really following your father's footsteps per se, other than you're also an investigator of claims of the supernatural, you know, getting a chance to reconnect to those grounding ties. Does that help you going forward with your own work in research and investigations?
It's a great question. It does. Every year I look back on where I was, I take notes, and as I meet more people and they come to me for help, and if I can get some, I do local. So, but I always, you know, you can do remote viewing and I've learned to start doing that as well. I always have my father in the back of my head. And then when I was able to connect with Lisette, it just kind of continued. And then I would picture Eileen and then I would see her forming and then others around who I don't even know who they are. And I said, this is huge. This is huge. So following in his footsteps as the daughter and a generational bloodline, call it what we will, I am also a different person. Number one, I'm a woman. We do things a little differently and I'm intuitive. So I tap into that side. And then the other side of me is very academic. Mm-hmm. Where I want to be a scientist. I'm not, but I want to think like one and I want to break it down because I don't believe everything. I doubt everything first and then I start picking it apart. Where my father, he didn't become sensitive until later on in life. So when he created the Holzer method where he decided to use a medium as a tool, which went against his PhD, let's call it what it is, you know, and bring the two together. He was just had that one role, kind of like what you're doing now on the show and before, just because you've been doing this anyway, getting to the bottom, asking the questions, being very serious about it, and everything else is blocked off. And then he would let other people do their job because he felt that was the best way to gather all the data. Because if you're doing everything at once, you know, you're going to miss a lot. And like, so for me, I have to decide on a case, who am I going to be? What role am I going to play? So I have to learn to train myself to separate it.
Mary Ellen asks, Alexandra, do you have spirit communication with your father?
Oy vey, do I ever? Yeah, and listen, it's not like I asked for it. You know, I was still grieving 3 days after he had passed, and I had a dream. Now, we all know about dreams, and we have precog abilities, and, you know, things happen maybe 2 years down the road, but we remember the dream that all of a sudden something just happened, and you want to know why it's familiar. It's not deja vu. It's you've dreamt it. But we're not always aware. We don't pay attention, and we forget as the day goes on. So 3 days he had passed. And he came to me in a dream, and all I could see were his feet and his shoes. And I knew it was him. That's part of intuition, you know. It's hard to prove something when you have to feel it from inside. And so then the feet started moving. Then there was a big band, big brass band in Manhattan playing. And I said, oh, my God. So the first thing he came to me and he showed me was, look, my feet are working again. When he had died, he couldn't walk anymore. His last year of life, he was in a chair, and that was it. So I knew right away he was showing me, I'm free. I can still now look at me, you know, and that's when that all began. And I had shut it down for a bit. I didn't want to deal with it. When we're grieving, it's really hard to say, yeah, well, I know where you are. You're fine. When it's your own, it's different. And so it started to build from there. So for the past 11 years, the dreams became physical realities in my home. He knocks things over, his books. He's so vain, but he knocks his own books over. You know, we've got a bucket experiment. That pings every so often. So we've been documenting it for years now, trying to still figure out decode what that is. You know, and then I can hear him at times. And it's not that I wanted this. It's just, it's because when he tells me things, they're happening. So it's where he was in life, in the afterlife. It's real. It's real. And I battle with that sometimes. It's crazy.
Well, Jeffrey Cutlip asks, Alexandra, where can you buy one of your father's books?
Good question. You can go on the Amazon.com because they have everything. They own everything, including the toilet paper I can't seem to find again. What the hell? I swear to God, it's starting again.
He's channeling now.
Just type in hot folder. I don't know.
Yeah, on Amazon, there's a lot of great ones. Are there links on your website at Alexandra Holzer as well?
There aren't. I'm really bad like that. But all the publishers, we're down to three. They all post them. They don't even update their websites anymore. They just put everything on Amazon. So I've learned that if you type in Hans Holzer, it brings up Crossroad Press Publishers. You've got Barnes & Noble, which they go under different hats now. And it's really not much on there. And Black Dog, which is part of Hatchet Publishing in Manhattan, but they don't do this anymore. They all have changed it, I think, because of the digital era. Everything goes on Amazon. You have to type in the author's name.
Well, I'm going to go off script here for a minute before we take a break. I wanted to tell you guys something strange. So I'm in this living room the other night, and my daughter and my son, Max, are sitting over on the love seat. And everybody else is spread throughout the house. And all of a sudden, we hear very clearly the sound of a woman crying. And at first, I'm thinking, oh, well, you know what? The anniversary of my wife's father's passing not the anniversary, but he passed. This is his birthday coming up, and maybe she's being emotional about it. But I can hear the shower going, and this cry sounds like it's coming from right over here. And then I'm thinking, okay, my daughter-in-law just had a baby. You know, there's all that emotion and things. Maybe she's crying, and my son comes walking upstairs. And I say, is Claire okay? And he goes, yeah, why? I'm like, well, we just heard her crying. Was that Claire? He goes, no, Dad, she was hopping in the shower. I'm like, dude, we just heard a woman crying. And he goes, no, that wasn't it. So my poor stepson, who's young, is sitting there, big eyes wide. And he's like, yeah, I heard it. And so my daughter has told him, oh, no, it was my TikTok. I was watching TikTok. That's what you heard, because we don't want to freak him out. But yeah, we're sitting in here. We heard crying on two separate occasions within a few minutes. And it was like full woman sobbing. And it was really unnerving. So I got to got to be honest, I'm starting to get a little unnerved with what happened this season, Shane. Maybe going back to these places where the ghosts are so hungry again. I don't know if we attracted energy. Are you having anything weird happen? I know you had something weird happen when you were on the road with your wife physically or psychically picking up on a site we were about to visit with no clue of where we were going. But have you had any weird experiences since we've returned home this season?
Well, it's funny you ask that, man, because just yesterday my wife was talking to me. She was in the kitchen. I was in the living room, and she was just talking about something. I can't remember. I'm sorry. I can't remember what she was talking about, but I know it's bad. But she said, and she never feels things like this. It's rare that she does, but she's like, she stops in mid sentence and she says, Shane. And I said, what? And she said, I just had a cold breeze just come by me, and there's no vents in our kitchen. There was nobody walking by. And she's like, every hair on the back of my neck stood up. Something just walked past me. I don't know what it is. And for people who don't know my wife, she had an experience some years ago at this place called the Pauley Jail in Union Springs, Alabama. And she doesn't want to get involved into this too much because she feels like she may bring something to one of the kids or something like that. So she's very apprehensive about this stuff. So for her to stop dead in her tracks and to say something like that, really strange. So I can't explain it. I don't know what it is, but that was something that just happened yesterday that was really out of the ordinary in the house. So yeah, I'm with you, Dave, man. I don't know. I mean, this season has been crazy, freaking crazy. I mean, the evidence that we've been capturing, all of this stuff, the experiences that we've had, I wouldn't doubt if, you know, something's happened and we've possibly brought something home or whatever else. It's just been a crazy season and a crazy year. So I don't know. I can't explain it.
Danny asks, do you guys get followed home too? So we've just talked about some of the brief stuff. Alex, I'm wondering, since we've kicked the hornet's nest and reopened these files, I mean, they're in your home. They're part of your life. Has that unleashed any weirdness in your own world?
Well, the basement's got an issue.
Yeah, I would guess. And we were lucky enough to be able to let you out of the basement this week with to get away from Gabe for just a short time and come on out and meet with Lizette. And people that keep asking, when is Alex going to join you outside of the basement? You just saw it outside of the basement. But stay tuned.
Let out. And I was fed, and then I was put back in. But I enjoyed that moment.
But stay tuned, because other exciting things may be happening later on this season. So make sure you tune in for that. Nicole Paris says, Dave, you're due for a cleanse. Yeah, I probably am. Yeah, come on, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. You're listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. And we are back. Thank you for tuning in. This is the best in paranormal talk radio, Darkness Radio. You can hear us every week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, with brand new episodes of the best in paranormal talk radio. Every Tuesday, True Crime Tuesday. Now, Shane, a lot of questions came in about shadow trackers, those tools. They want a little bit of better understanding of how those tools work. I do as well. I mean, I know you describe it to me on set, and you're walking me through what needs to be done and how these will work or will not work. And then we have to address the orb situation again. Now I'm curious, Alex, I know your dad wasn't big into equipment with photographs. What was his stance on orbs? Did he have a stance, or?
We had the great orb debate at my sister's house in Riverdale in the Bronx one day. And I was doing photography. I had taken photography in college as well. And my mother and I were going through the photos, and she was like, I could see it. And so people laugh, oh, there's a face in there. How do you know it's pixelated? But you can clearly see when you know how the photo was taken, the environment that it was taken in, the time, the temperature, all of that. You know, again, there's that scientific part of it where you have to break it down. And so we've got all these shots, still frame shots of the same scene, and these circular shapes with some of them have different colors. And so my mother was explaining to me that certain colors are peaceful and other colors are negative energies, if you will. So when we brought this up to my father, and first he's like, "Where are my glasses?" And they're on his head, by the way. So that was really funny. And so I said, "Daddy, please put them back on your face. They're on your head." He's like, "Oh yeah, okay." So we show him the pictures. My mother and I, my mom, you know, she worked with him for 10 years and she's also very intuitive, and there's that whole lineage as well. So he's looking at them and he's like, "Yeah, yeah, but I don't see nothing. This could be anything." And so he really didn't want to even go there with those. I saw it differently because I know what the frames look like. I knew what the environment was, you know, contained. There was no issues. And I couldn't explain how something could form. See, because the energy forms, it changes shape. And so it's not a dust particle and it's not a bug flying by. And, you know, and it's not outside, it's not raining. So I really had to deduce that possibly it's how energy forms, and then it gets the label it gets, and then, you know, on it goes. But he didn't like them.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I'm going to be honest with you folks. I'm not a fan. We've talked about that before. But there are instances where it gets weird. I think we mentioned last week on the show that the shuddering orb that moved down the sleeping berth of the USS Constellation, and as it moved past this one hammock, it began swinging back and forth. That was two things coming together, creating something interesting. Now, for the most part, we're in old, dusty houses. There are bugs, and at that time, it was warm out, so there were bugs, dust, moisture, things like that. But Shane, explain to me how the shadow trackers work. What actually triggers them?
All right, so the shadow trackers, they're basically motion detectors. And so if anything passes over them, it's going to light up the LEDs, and it's going to light up in the direction where the movement is coming from. Now, what people don't know about the shadow trackers, a lot of people don't know about them, is there's different modes to them. So there's five different modes that you can set them to, and it's basically the sensitivity of which basically the footage, as you will, of where the shadow can pass over to make the LEDs light up. So in this particular instance, I set the sensitivity really low. So you have to be basically right over it. Whenever they cut to the actual scene where I'm running my hand over it, if you go just a couple of feet up, it's not going to go off because the sensitivity is so low that you have to be right over these shadow trackers in order to set them off. So that's basically how they work. It's movement, it's motion. Something has to go directly over them.
It's something powerful too. It's not just a little bug,
right,
or a dust particle flying over them. That's what was so weird about this catch is, first of all, you hear footsteps and you see this energy move over, and as it passes mm-hmm. directly over the one shadow tracker, it begins blinking and flickering and then goes out as it veers away. So that was really bizarre.
Yeah, that's bizarre. And what's crazy is it was only that one. So you see this, whatever this energy form was, moving over it, but it only hits that one and makes it go off. So it makes you wonder almost as if they can, show themselves in any way. You know what I mean? It's kind of weird, like if they can choose a piece of equipment to show themselves with. And with the whole orb situation, I'm not a big fan either. 9 times out of 10, it's environmental. It's a bug, it's dust, it's things like that. It's something you can explain away. But what I look for personally is compounding evidence leading up to that event or right after the event. So if, just like in this case that you guys saw, you see this energy manifestation come up, but then you see our shadow trackers light up at the same time. So it's compounding evidence with that. So yes, we saw a lot of strange things that we couldn't say for sure if it was a bug or dust or anything like that throughout this case. But personally, you know, if there's not compounding things leading up to or happening right after it, we have to disregard, because 9 times out of 10 is something environmental or something that can be explained away.
And I've got to mention, watching during the live tweets, which I love doing every week. So you follow us on Twitter and just use hashtag Holzer Files, and you can tweet along with us and communicate, and we're usually on there. I love that people are like, why aren't you talking about the orbs? Why aren't you talking about the orbs? We're like, well, we're still in the middle of the investigation. At this point, you know, you're watching it. We haven't even seen that footage as investigators. We still have to go back.
Right.
So nobody's talking about the orbs as nobody has seen them. And then when we get to the end, like you said, if there's not corroboration, if there's not multiple things taking place with an orb, we dismiss it. That's just plain and simple, because it is such a controversial bit. And so many fans have turned against the orbs, and that they don't want to see that kind of activity always presented as paranormal. So we've been hypersensitive to try to find things that make it happen. Now, what I will say is, could it be dust? Yes. Could it be that this being is creating a static energy as it's moving through that room? You're hearing the footsteps. Could a dust particle be caught in its wake, and we're just catching the reflective light off of that? Very well could be. So I don't dismiss what's happening. You know, dust moves with that, and right. And if there's a static presence, it can move along with it. So that's something to tackle. Troy Harvey asks, how often when you investigate, is there a feeling of an evil presence? And that's, I'll start off and then we'll bounce to each one of you. But for me, it just kind of depends on the story I know going in, which is sometimes why I like to be a blank slate. If you go in hearing all these horrific stories, and as you learned last week on the Franklin Castle, there's a lot of stories and a lot of bad things told about these spirits, and none of them proved to be real. We could find no corroborating evidence of that. But you go in with that mental picture, you start to get that feel. Then are you truly picking up on an evil presence, or are you picking up on your own fear factor? So to me, it's hard to differentiate those. So we all try to take breaths, and we'll all anchor each other. There are times I get very flustered, and Shane will talk me through it, or Cindy will sit me down and Dave, just take a couple deep breaths, or, you know, she'll talk us down, or she has to be talked down because she's starting to feel agitated by our energy and the energy of the spirits and the location. So there's a lot to that. But how about you, Alex? I mean, you've been on a lot of investigations yourself. How often do you ever walk in and think, ooh, this is just evil? This isn't just creepy. There's something evil.
Yeah. A few years back, we actually had gone to a place called the White House, and you can Google it. It was in Goshen, New York. It's actually, it was a murder house, and they tore it down a couple of years ago. It's nothing to speak of. It's on a bunch of like land and marshes, and there's a hospital behind it, you know, but don't let the size fool you, because it really has to do with, and this goes back to your intuition. We all have that ability to be aware and awakened to feeling, and it's hard to prove a feeling, but that's how it starts with me, is the overall, that gut that we all have, you know, this is not right. And, you know, I didn't know too much about the story. It was just sitting there. I've driven by it for like 15, 20 years. So we went in there just to figure out what was going on. It's just sitting there. And so the less you know, the better sometimes. And this is one of those cases. And when I walked in, you've got dilapidated stairs. You've got the hole through the floor. We could see the basement. The house is kind of leaning sideways. And I went in anyway. I was with my husband, you know, he's an empath. And we started filming, you know, and it just, I could stand there and I said, you know, I know this sounds really dumb and very unintelligent and not academic, but I feel like we're being watched, and I can't explain it and I can't prove it. And it's really frustrating. And so those are those moments where other places you walk into, it's also the people in that environment. So this was an empty house. So it was up to our own devices to figure that out, and equipment and so forth. And then the history. But if you go into a place where you're meeting somebody, you've got their energy too. So you've got all that going on. You have to separate. Remember I was saying again, pick it apart. Where, who are they? There's a psychology to the parapsychology as well. So you have to figure all that out. You have to be a psychologist, and then you have to do a walkabout. And then what is the history of the place as you're going through it? Sometimes you don't need to be told. It's just bad. Something bad happened there, maybe multiple times, or maybe the house is buried on top of a graveyard. Poltergeist. I mean, it happens.
Yeah, unfortunately, especially on the East Coast. A lot of Native American burial lands all over that area.
You don't know, you know.
Right. Yeah. Shane, what about you? I mean, have you ever just walked into a place besides my hotel room after a night of White Castles and just felt the presence of something evil?
That's a whole other side of evil right there. But what Alexandra has said multiple times, she's told me this multiple times too, is sometimes you fear things you don't understand. And that's very true. A case in point is the Barnstable House, which was last season. I went in there and I encountered some things in the basement that made me run out of there. But what was there, I don't think was necessarily evil. I think it was the spirit of Lucy, trying to call out saying, does anybody hear me? I think a lot of it goes into you going into a location and you have that blank slate scenario to an extent. You don't really know what you're getting yourself into in certain locations. And I think fear sometimes can bring about all of these emotions. And a lot of times there's just, I wouldn't say evil, but negative. Like if a spirit is bad in this life, or, if a human's bad in this life, then 9 times out of 10, they're going to be bad in the afterlife, that it might carry over some. So, a lot of negative, but it's kind of hard to say. It's really hard to say. I think that when you don't fully understand what's going on, as far as when you're first walking into it, you can have all of this trepidation and it can feel evil to you, but it's kind of hard to say.
Well, that folds in nicely with our next question from Joseph Hoffman. He says, I've seen 3 groups investigate Franklin Castle and all 3 came up with different hypotheses. How come? Well, I think, as we just mentioned, a lot of it is what you go in believing. If you go in believing that the stories of Hannes Tiedemann are true, that he was a brutal man who murdered a servant, and the lies have been told and the stories have been told, and they've kind of created a life of their own, a tulpa, look that up, folks, T-U-L-P-A, or thought form, words have energy. Words are powerful. And when you tell the same story over and over and over and over and over, you start to imprint upon an area, a story, a ghost. There's the famous Philip experiment. And for those of you that are not familiar, go research that. That's a fascinating experiment where this group of students created a ghost in Canada, I believe. And they called it Philip, and they gave him a backstory in history. And then they'd investigate the home and they'd get the answers that they had planted, the technology. Other people would come in and get the same answers. So it really leads you to question how powerful and how integral are we in an investigation. What we do is we go in with what knowledge we've been told, the stories and everything, but we also try to go in with a blank slate. We'll use the history we know to try to communicate, but we're open to whatever is there to make communication with us. So I think the reason people will have different experiences is they came in with a different theory or a different thing in mind. And let's face it, we're probably all guilty of this at one point or another, but when you go in with one theory, you kind of want to find the evidence that proves your theory. And not many people will walk away from that. We went in with one theory and one set of beliefs, and we slowly, through talking to people and everything, had it chipped down. Now I have to ask, did the other groups that go in there do as much research and work and history as Hans Holzer did? And then our researchers did? And then our team did by going out and talking to historians, and talking to experiencers, and talking to everybody that we could get our hands on, reading articles and books and diaries. So we really kind of had this overarching story point of understanding a much bigger dynamic of this story and realizing that, and again, I do want to clarify this. A lot of people beat up on Dee Romano last week. Don't beat up on Dee Romano. That's her house. That was her family. She was 4 years old when she lived there. These are the stories that were told to her by her family, information that we weren't calling her a liar. We weren't calling her family liars. We were saying her family was fed misinformation, because we can track that those stories never existed before the 1960s. There wasn't talk, Hannes Tiedemann murdering people. There wasn't this talk. So she was being very protective of her family. She was being very protective and was fearful that we were trying to cast aspersions or a shadow over her. We weren't. She even admitted, and I think if people pay attention, she admitted that the people that had the place before her and even after her, tried to perpetrate some fraud, hiding bones in the wall that they suddenly uncover and trying to get attention for that location. So she's acutely aware of the fact that there has been shenanigans, but she's a girl who grew up hearing what mom and dad had to say, and she believes them. And who are we to come in one day tell her she's wrong? And she was very, I appreciate that she stuck to her guns. I appreciate that she kept in line with what she wanted to believe. We could only do what we can do. People say, does it frustrate you that you can't turn a skeptic into a believer? No, our job isn't to make you believe. Our job is to share the story. And we leave you, because we believe you to be an intelligent source, to make up your own mind. And if you're not an intelligent source, for $29.95 a week, you can sign up for my subscription where I will teach you how to be a ghost hunter. And no, that's not how it works, guys. Where I can, but you have to be really cautious, and what you bring into something is often what you take out of it. And we can see that in our culture today with politics, medicine, even going down to things like the abortion topic. You come in with a concept, nobody's going to sway you from it, because you're going to find the things that make sense and line up with your facts, and you're going to throw away everything else. So that might be why, Joseph, there are three different iterations. I would love to do an investigation multi-layered, where you have one team go in and investigate with all the same information we have. Then our team goes and investigates. And then we have a third group that comes in without any knowledge of the location. And then we sift through our audio, our video. Can we get corroborating things? Can we get similar aspects? Or because of our preconceived notions, do we influence our own experience?
That would be really cool to test out. That would be definitely cool to test out.
Shane, my daughters want to know what's scarier, basements or attics?
Basements. And I don't know why. Don't ask why. I think maybe it's just the environment I'm in, but basements are just, they're creepy to me.
Alex, you're always very stoic about a lot of this. We encountered a few cases where your dad left in a hurry. He was not showing cowardice, but you could see he didn't want to be there. Did he often get rattled by cases?
No, my father was too arrogant in a polite way. He was a little arrogant about it because, he was just so focused on getting to the history of what was going on in that location. Who were these people he was talking to? But he never made them feel like they were lying. That would come in after. Then he'd say, this is bullshit. I put it down, but no, this is not right. So, but, he had big parables. He didn't really care, but very...
Wait a minute, for clarification, he had a big pair of balls, or he had big paranormal balls, as though he was brave in situations?
I shouldn't have said a word. I thought, as it came out, too late. He had a big New York pair of balls, laced with Austrian attitude.
That's so funny.
He basically, he held seances in our apartment where the table, which I inherited, that's great. It's in our sitting room, but whatever, flew across the room. So, Ethel had been to a lot of these seances as well, family members, friends, and so forth. I mean, literally the furniture would move around in our apartment just by sitting there and conjuring up what they were doing. He always felt like nothing's going to happen because I'm in control. I'm in charge and you're not going to boss me around. That was his whole attitude, of course, more eloquently, but, he was very rarely rattled. There was just a few moments like that. And I think because he's also human, he probably wouldn't want to admit it. But his job was to be strong and educated and mindful and aware and get the damn story, what was going on.
I want to tell people, so I think it was 2007, 2008, when we had you and your father on our radio show. Your first book, his final book. And we had both of you back to back. You helped set it up. And I remember calling you because we pre-recorded, and I called you and I'm like, Alex, I don't know if I should play this. Your dad sounds really angry through all of this interview. And you're like, that's my dad, Dave. Play it. You're getting him. So those episodes have now been reclaimed. They're part of Darkness Radio's archives. For many years, they've been lost to us. We finally have started putting back in our old episodes. So if you are a follower of Darkness Radio on whatever system and podcast device you use, go back into the deals. We're on Stitcher, and there are two ways you can subscribe. One is Stitcher Premium. It's around $5 a month, and it gets you all of the shows ad-free, no commercials. But not only do you get our show, you get every show on Stitcher Premium's platform for that $5. Or if you want the free episodes, you can go in and get the free episodes just by listening to Stitcher and Darkness Radio. But scroll through, go back. It's around 2007, 2008 to the Hans Holzer and Alexandra Holzer doubleheader, and you'll get a chance to hear how Alex and I first came to know one another and hear my interview with Hans Holzer, whose most answers came out to be, the tools are garbage. You need a good transmedium, and that's it for an hour. That's like the only answer I got when it came to anything about the current field.
He didn't get even worse than that. Sometimes he's like, what the shit is this?
I would love to have just sat down and watched Ghost Adventures or Ghost Hunters with him for one night.
He actually watched a couple of Ghost Hunters because I was watching. I was so excited after In Search Of. I was looking for something else. You know, this is God forever ago, right? And so I started watching it. I had called him up. I said, Daddy, there's a show called Ghost Hunters, plural, you know, because he had a show, Ghost Hunter. And he goes, what is this? I said, so I told him where to watch it, you know, and so he turns it on. I'm waiting. A week goes by. I don't hear from him. I'm like, what's going on? So I call him back. He's like, I'm like, Daddy. He's like, yeah, what's going on? You okay? I said, good. You need vitamin C? No. Did you watch Ghost Hunters? He's like, oh, what shit. What is all Hollywood? Hollywood? I don't know. I'm not there. I don't know what to tell you. Shit.
Brad Kershaw, how has feedback been on this season? I feel it's awesome. Each show gets better and better. There better be a season 3, 4, and 5. Well, Chad, I hope there's a 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 as well. The season seems to be going well. We need to hear from all of you. Keep listening to Darkness Radio, giving me your feedback. Come here every Thursday after the show and make sure that you make your voice heard and make it aware that this is what's going on and that you love the show. And every chance you get, tweet and Facebook and tag Travel and tell them how much you love the Holzer Files and how it has to stay on. And it's truthfully a groundswell. Watch the show, if you can, live on Thursday nights. If you can't and you DVR it, watch it within 48 hours of the time it aired so that it counts towards the ratings. That's how you'll save shows like ours and any of your favorite shows out there. Now, let me mention, next week, December 3rd, Holzer Files has a marathon that day. I think there's like 8 or 9 episodes, some from season 1, some from season 2, and our brand new episode that will air at 10 o'clock Eastern, 9 o'clock Central, 10 o'clock Pacific. It's called Blood in the Water. And this was a pretty weird case, Shane. I remember we go in, and this is another example of going in with one set of expectations only to have it blown away and realize it's much bigger, right, than did Lee Harvey Oswald shoot alone. It was one of those kind of cases where as we started to pull at the strings, the tapestry unwove, and we realized how big the scope of this haunting was. And it's kind of cool because what was the name of the town? Is it Cohasset?
No, it wasn't Cohasset. It was the conference house, right?
No. Blood on the Water. Isn't that the...
It's too much. It's too much.
I don't know. I'm trying to remember all the dang names of the episodes.
I think it's Conference House, if I'm not mistaken. But
Is that Rockland?
Staten Island? No, Conference House is on Staten Island.
Yeah, I don't know. Watch next week. You'll be a surprise. Well, there's two I'm thinking of, Shane. One was where the town was that they filmed Witches of Eastwick. Remember?
Yeah, it all jumbles together. I can't remember.
We investigate one location and directly next to it, another one opens up to us. And it's kind of cool because I watched Witches of Eastwick a couple of weeks back with my girls. And you see Jack Nicholson getting blown down the street right past the two locations we investigate, which had been turned into Eastwick.
That's Cohasset. Cohasset.
So I think that's
the one you're talking about.
I think that's next week, I think. If it's not, it's the conference house. Both have kind of a creepy, similar vibe to the story. That's why I'm being very cautious how I go forward with that. But both are great stories. But there's a full marathon next December 3rd. So make sure to watch that too. Watch the reruns, watch the new shows, and share it. You know, constantly people are telling me, God, I didn't even know you guys were back on. So tell your friends, tell your family, tell your neighbors, go out and talk to the dog, whatever. Let everybody know that the Holzer Files are back on Thursday night. Tonight was our fifth episode. We've got 13 this season. So just doing quick math, that's still like 28 more episodes this year.
Yeah. I just looked it up. Conference House is next week. And you were right, Alex. It's Staten Island. Yep.
Oh, Conference House, I'm going to say this, one of my favorite locations because of the history. And
oh, yeah.
Being able to stand in a room that Benjamin Franklin stood in, trying to negotiate peace with the king's people to save us from this battle that was going to come. What an amazing piece of history. But this story is so much bigger in scope, so much bigger than what you thought you knew about history. And has, I think, Shane, this has one of the creepiest communications I've ever been a part of.
Oh, without a doubt. Yep.
Just thinking about it, all six hairs on my Homer Simpson head just stood straight up.
Okay, it is a terrifying episode filled with lots of creepy stuff.
Well, you know what? With the Conference House, my mother, you know, she used to do haunted artwork, which back in this, you're an idiot.
My dog, when I started doing Homer Simpson, my dog was laying on the floor next to me, just turned up and he's like,
"That's sad. That's my dog." So with the Conference House, so my mother used to do haunted artwork, which now is, you know, but back in the 60s, it was nobody was really doing pen and ink with haunted houses. It was kind of like a thing that she started. And so she started having exhibits in the galleries. And the Conference House is one of the canvases we had hanging up in the apartment growing up in Manhattan. It was an oil canvas. And I believe I have a photo of it. So what I'll do is I'll post that on Twitter for the next episode so you can see, because she used to do them and they sometimes became part of the art inside some of my father's books and sometimes they were the book cover.
Very cool.
Cameron says that Alexandra, you should dub your father's voice during the recreations.
Oh, I we very carefully through the hallway.
I'm hoping at some point on one of these investigations, I don't know how you feel about it, but boy, I'd love to have you join us and maybe even call forth on your dad to see if he can help us. Listen,
I would love it because I've already had that experience a few times. And, you know, it's almost like you have a box of chocolate and you want to eat the whole box, but you don't. You have to just have a few at a time. When I work and my father comes through like that, it's like I have to prepare myself for him to show up. I don't ask for it. I pray to him because, you know what, I'm nervous and I have anxieties and I don't know what I'm opening myself up to. I have the kids, the same situation, right? We don't want to bring it home. I know this happens. It does exist. I believe in that. And so, but I pray to him, please protect me and those around me because I don't want to bring anything home. I want to get through this. I need to know what's going on. Please be here. And then he comes through. We're recording it. It's happening. And every time I'm like, I don't know how to react. It sounds really stupid, but it's like, I need him here, but I don't know if I want you here. Maybe a little bit over here.
That's, you know, it's like since my grandfather died, my grandfather was my hero. You know, he was a great father figure to me, very close to me. And I've always wanted connectivity with him. And I had a dream visitation with him that was very powerful and proved to me with beyond a shadow of a doubt that we had communicated because he gave me information that I brought back that I did not know. And when I told my mom and aunt, they were able to corroborate it and prove that I had talked to my grandfather. Well, what you're saying, talking about the, do you really want it? I'm driving in the car, and I just told my daughters this story earlier today. We're driving in the car, and my son Nathan is in the back seat, and this is when he's very little and not speaking. He's like the mama, papa, dada, that kind of stuff, and that's about the extent of it. My grandfather had a very unique nickname. I won't say it because I'm still waiting for a good medium to come forward and tell me the name, so I know I'm making that communication. But let's just say shoelace, okay? Just something weird and random you would not think a kid would say. And I'm driving, and I can see him in the rearview mirror, and he's turned up, and he's just, my dad about it. And he's talking and giggling to something. And I go, Nathan, who are you talking to? And he's looking and smiling. And he just turns and looks at me and he goes, shoelace. And then he turns back and looks up and starts giggling. Yeah. So again, shoelace in exchange for the real name I called my grandfather. I didn't call him shoelace. But now I'm going to ask my grandson Declan to call me shoelace because that is a cool grandpa nickname. For those of you that don't know, my grandson was born on the 18th on my wedding anniversary to the lovely Winnie, my daughter Ripley's birthday, and Declan all born and sharing that same date. He is happy, healthy, big boy, 9 pounds, 10 ounces, 22 inches long, winging in from Minnesota, ready to fight in the corner. He's going good. He's doing good. Looks gorgeous. He's a sweetheart of a baby. So thank you to all the Darkness Radio listeners and Holzer File fans for your love and support on that. Your dad would like this comment. Lena says, I caught my cat watching tonight's episode with me. Your dad was a cat guy, wasn't he?
Oh, forget about it. I mean, the cat. So, of course, we rescued from the ASPCA. I got my first black cat when I was a little girl. We named her Sylvia. If it was a boy, it'd be Sylvester. And it became his cat. Like, what the frick? You know, the cat would end up on the desk because he would have that overhanging writer's lamp, you know, that would heat up everything. And the cat would just be sprawled out the whole time. And there's Sylvia. And he'd be, nice kitty. Nice kitty. Type. Nice kitty. I'm like, so I would keep rescuing them. Sometimes I'd have to bring them to the shelter. He wouldn't let me have a whole bunch in the house. But, you know, when I had shown him that I rescued dogs when he came to my house for one Christmas, and he goes, oh, what a cute little brown kitty. I said, Daddy, that's a brown dachshund. What? German. That doesn't exist. I said, it's a dog. Woof, dog. He goes, I don't like.
Nice. Very cool. Hey, guys, it was a pleasure. Thank you for coming on. I know Thanksgiving is a time of family, but I want people to know again, and I firmly believe in this, family transcends just blood. We've got our families that we spent time with today, but we have families that are outside of our normal lineage. And I think you guys, Cindy and Gabe and all the great people at Painless are part of my family as well. So thank you for celebrating the holiday with me tonight and being here. I appreciate it. Alexandra, is there anything you want to tell people, anything you have going on right now or how they can keep up with you?
Yeah, I have a book that's coming out soon. I don't know when, but it's coming. I'll let you know. And we have another project, I believe, for the network. So for Daddy. So that's good. Yes, we say in private. I don't know all the details, but it's coming.
Okay.
For Daddy. And, you know, hopeful for the new year to get more stuff out there and help people and learn as we're all doing this together. You know, nobody knows more than the next person. Some people might, some people know less. But if we all teach each other, it's nice that we're all on the same level. Do you know what I mean? It's that's right. What we're supposed to be doing. So.
Well, I appreciate it. I know I'm sure we're going to see you pop in on Holzer's Ghosts after show. At least one or two more times this season with us. So thank you. Back-to-back weeks. Thank you for being here with us, Alex. Shane Pittman, officialshanepittman.com. You can get your hashtag poor Shane merchandise there. Truthfully, you can. He has t-shirts and mugs and mouse pads and whatever. So go check it out. You also have poor Shane masks, don't you? COVID masks?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. And I'm also, yeah,
poor Shane condoms.
Poor Shane, what?
I can't hear you.
Whoa!
How can people keep up with you, Shane? Your website, officialshanepittman.com, and what do you got going on?
Man, you threw me off for a second there, buddy. Yeah, on Facebook, you can look me up, Shane Pittman. Instagram, Twitter, @StarringShane. I'm also doing a side project with two of my good buddies, Ray Causey and Josh Purvis. It's called The Searchers, basically doing a lot of local haunts and investigations, kind of showing people the grassroots of where I started and kind of bringing them along on the journey. So we're doing that, and you can find us on searchersbelieve.com and The Searchers on Facebook. And that's basically it. And I just wanted to say too that to all the viewers out there, you guys have been so awesome. Like, the support has been unreal, and we really do love you guys. We really appreciate your support of Hans Holzer's work and us carrying it on and things like that and doing the best we can. You guys have been phenomenal, and we appreciate you guys.
Very much so. We will be back next week. We've got another brand new episode, and we'll have a couple of cool new guests that'll be joining me here on Holzer's Ghost, the after party discussion. You can find us here every Thursday night after a brand new episode of the Holzer Files. We'll be here to discuss the episode you just watched and go a little deeper and answer some of your questions. And what you can do to not miss this is make sure you subscribe to my YouTube channel if that's where you're watching this. Or when you go to my Facebook page and you see these pop-ups every Thursday, make sure you click the little star so that that way it alerts you when we go live. And then share it to your pages. Let's get a big group out here. And I challenge all of you to start tweeting with us every week during the show. Let's get Holzer trending on social media. Holzer Files, hashtag Holzer Files every week. Let's do that. Let's just get the numbers up through the roof and have the world recognize this this gentleman and his great work and the files that we represent and go back out to investigate. So stay safe, everyone. I hope you all had a wonderful time with your family. Be kind to one another. Be patient. And remember, we're all going through something a little weird right now. Let's just go through it and be weird together. We'll see you again back here next week on the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Darkness Radio.